try again.
That's right, man. You hear the music. You know it's Thursday night, 11 o'clock, Kayak Fishing Radio Network's Late Show. I'm your host, Rob of Bad Backcast DeVore. And you can check out all of my going-ons at my blog, badbackcast.com. And got a busy, quite a busy night tonight. Got a lot of West Coast rep going on here. We got Isaac the Nothing Miller on the phone with us. We've got Dennis Spike, otherwise known as Spiker from kayakfishing.com. And Redfish Chuck is in the mix there. And looks like we got the landing crew, Mark Wheeler. So, yeah, man, you know, welcome aboard. Once again, got a busy, busy week. A lot of stuff to go over. And Chip put some new sound bites and stuff in the switchboard here, so we're gonna have fun with it tonight. Let me see what's going on. Oh, this weekend in Tampa, the always popular Tampa Tribune Outdoor Expo, brought to you by Frank Sargent, is coming up. It's going to be this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, at the what are they calling that down there? The expo. They used to call it the Expo Hall. I forget what they call it now, but at the fairgrounds there. And I mean, it's a huge lineup, a great lineup of fishing seminars. Neil Taylor is actually doing a kayak fishing seminar down there this week. So go on in. It's it's $5 to park and $8 a person to get in. You don't want to. I mean, all of those seminars. I really need to go to those seminars, because if anybody needs to learn anything about fishing, it's me. C.A. Richardson from Flats Class is going to be there. The Mad Snooker, Dave Pomerleau, is going to be doing a seminar on snook tactics. And the always popular and always legendary Lefty Cray is going to be doing a fly casting seminar there at the casting pool. So, you know, if you're not doing anything this weekend, head on out there. You really need to, even if you're doing something this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the fairgrounds. So, let's see what else we got here. I got so much stuff to talk about tonight. I had to write it down, so forgive me for being a little bit long-winded. We got the yakangler.com trip, the Fishapalooza trip to Mosquito Lagoon, April 2nd and 3rd. I'll probably be there a couple of days prior to, as they say, pre-fish the area. And Redfish Chuck and D. Kaminsky, they'll be meeting us down there. I think Chip is coming down. Ortiz Ardamez has put it together for us. So we're going to have a couple of the guys from Irish Water Dogs will be there. Should be a good time down there, man. So if you get a chance, you don't want to miss out on that one. And what else is going on? Oh, yeah, I watched Kayak Kevin sent me his two DVDs, the Fish in Chesapeake Bay and the Chesapeake Bay Tour. And I'll tell you what, man, they got a nice fishery up there in Virginia. And these DVDs are pretty sweet. You know, kind of tells a little bit about the fishery up there. And, you know, I really enjoyed the Chesapeake Bay Tour one, man. That was really cool. Something definitely looks like something I would do. So if you get a chance, go to kayakkevin.com and pick up a couple of those. You'll be glad that you did. So let's see what's going on. So Spiker, tell me, what do you got going on the West Coast, man? You're like the West Coast dude.
I'm one of them anyway. I appreciate that.
Hey, man, you were like one of the first dudes to do this kayak fishing stuff, man. So I blame you for my addiction to floating around in little plastic boats.
And I take that with a big load of honor, and I appreciate that. You know, I was really lucky. I was in the right place at the right time. I had just gotten my acupuncture degree, and I started the whole thing pretty much in Southern California, but mostly off the beaches of Malibu. And I worked in the smoke shop industry for a long time while I was going through acupuncture, actually school, before and after that. And a lot of people don't know this. I propped all the pipes and cigars that you see on old shows like The Seinfeld Show and Cheers. And remember Tom Selleck, all the Magnum PI shows? But that's what I was doing in the smoke shop business. While I was there, I went to college, got my degree in acupuncture. And I had been fishing an old ocean kayak scupper. My cousin had a Dimension Solo. I think they were made in Canada. And they were both sitting on top boats, and we started hitting Malibu and catching really big fish. And when I got out of acupuncture college, I wouldn't even start seeing patients till 1 in the afternoon because I'd be fishing all morning. And back in 1994, a magazine in Southern California called Pacific Fisherman contacted me and asked me if I could write an article for them. That article came out in February of 95, and, you know, you were just talking about all the shows going on right now. It's the time of year. I had never been to a fishing show before that, and the magazine had a booth down there, called me up, said, hey, you got to come down here. And they printed on the issue right before that show of Pacific Fisherman a picture of my cousin. It was a snapshot. They put it on the cover, him holding a, I don't know, it was like a little 15-pound halibut. And and the sport, it seemed like it was born. We knew there was a buzz before that. But I went on seeing patients for a couple years or three and then did a full swing into the kayak fishing thing. And it's just the stories of how everything happened are so long, I won't bore you with them. But the website was a gift from a guy who caught his first halibut, period. His first legal halibut on the kayak the first day he fished. And everything is... What's that?
I think it's awesome. Hey, Chuck, have you ever seen Spiker's picture there of how big it is, like 75-pound white bass or something?
The white sea bass is a croaker, and it's a similar-looking fish to like the Chilean sea bass.
Yeah, I mean, and you're like holding that thing up, and its tail's dragging the ground, and that's crazy to get.
Well, you know,
like
you guys were talking about a couple weeks ago when you went and whacked it on the Indian River, and it was just one of those epic fishing days.
Yep.
This was a bite that we had seen before that follows the population of squid. But sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And we were just lucky. We had experience with the conditions. And I got lucky on that fish. I mean, I had broken off a fish that was probably bigger and put on the heaviest outfit I had, but with only 20-pound leader. And I was just plumb lucky to get that fish to the boat. And it was a great experience. We've got some big stuff, you know, and I'm sure you guys, I mean, you hook into them too, the sharks and the tarpon and everything else. That big stuff will pull your kayak around.
Oh, I know. You know, we get tarpon around here, you know, and that's I've been towed around a little bit by a couple of those.
What an incredible fish.
I'm telling you, man, I don't know, and that was on fly, so I still haven't landed one on fly.
That's just amazing.
Yeah.
That's just amazing.
But I didn't land him, or, you know, I just had him on and towed me around and jumped me around a little bit, and let me tell you, water skier, literally, behind that thing.
The sleigh ride.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up really bad on coming through.
I'm sorry. Are you on Kayak Wars this year?
I'm not. I'm not. I just haven't had an opportunity to even take a good look at it, but you can be assured after this show I'm going to. You know, our seasons are real beat up here, and I know on a lot of times we get the opportunity, we talk about our access and, you know, our rights to access, our rights to the fishery, and what's going on with the fisheries. And socially we have such a progressive movement of people who are so out of touch with the fisheries and conservation and doing everything from, I don't like to use the term tree hugger feel good point of view, but it really, in a lot of ways, when I look at a lot of the organizations, our favorite one, PETA, and then just dozens of organizations beyond that, and how they directly affect closing areas on the Eastern Seaboard in Florida. Here in California, we're dealing with the Marine Life Protection Act, which threatens to close 15 to 20% of fishing grounds in California that in the last 10 years have become globally the model for recovering sustainable fisheries. And it's just crazy stuff with what's going on. I moved from, in Malibu you can scratch a bite out pretty much any month of the year if you've got weather. But I'm 500 miles north now, up near Bodega Bay. That's where Alfred Hitchcock filmed that movie, The Birds. It's a completely different fishery. It's a really beautiful spot, a beautiful part of California. But it's a completely different fishery than down south. And I got to tell you, every bit from here on up, you move up the coast, you get up there by Isaac, and it's a whole different fishery up there, too. Lots of the same fish, but all of them are bigger, and the conditions are bigger, too. But with the Dungeness crab, we are managing to get out every month of the year for the past year. And then this month, some California halibut should start moving in, along with some leopard sharks, which for me are an incidental catch, and I'll get released, but they're pretty fun. And they fight a lot like a white sea bass, big, long runs. And the leopard sharks get up 50 pounds or so. They're a lot of fun. But come May and June, the rockfish season opens again, and this is a series of groundfish that look like bass, are classified as rockfish, add lingcod and a species called cabazon to it, and it is some serious fishing. And one thing I rarely had in Southern California, and it's funny, I just get all my plugs in, I just started guiding again for the first time since Yeah, it is very cool. Since I moved back to California, you know, I made the, all right, I'm going to get all the shameless ones in. I made a video about 7 years ago called the kayak fishing video.
Okay.
And it's an instructional video, and I wrote it so that whether a guy was in Maine, Missouri, or the Pacific Coast, that anywhere a guy could watch this video, or girl, and make some of the, enter the sport after watching it, make good purchasing decisions and not make all the wrong ones. We've sold over 10,000 of these DVDs in 7 years, and it's brought a lot of people into the sport. And the DVD, I didn't really tell people I moved out of Southern California. I didn't tell them that when I went to Mexico, and I didn't say much when I came up to Northern California. But because of that DVD, they've been rooting me out and finding me, so I'm really excited about it. I got the guide license showed up a couple weeks ago, and we're just waiting for some fish to come back. But talking about the fisheries, this is the first time in 3 years they're proposing that we're going to have a real salmon season. Not only are they going to let us fish, but there should be fish in the water to catch.
Well, and let me just back you up a little, second here.
Stop me anytime.
No. It's okay. Dude, I love having you on here, man. It's awesome.
Thank you so much.
I love hearing about the West Coast and you know, other fisheries, man. So to me, it's awesome. Hey,
it's the
now,
same
what,
for me. I've been living vicariously through your fishing reports the last few months.
Well, now tell me, why are they closing off the what's with the deal with this Marine Life Protection Act thing?
11 years ago, legislation was enacted in the state of California, not through the initiative process, through smart political maneuvering by environmentalist groups, including the Packard Foundation, who Julie Packard owns the Monterey Bay Aquarium. So it's kind of ironic that somebody who owns an aquarium would want to outlaw sport fishing.
Yeah.
But what happened was 11 years ago, they enacted the Marine Life Protection Act, and it makes 15 to 20% of the coastal fishing zones in California, it completely protects them to any fishing and any gathering.
Yeah.
So there will be no more take. These, what it effectively does is it makes little aquarium areas, in theory, now this was done without much level of science at all. They thought that if they made protected areas that it would make an ocean chain for breeding. Now, a lot of in 10 years, this thing just kind of sat on the books and was never enacted. But really what fishery politics I'm coming to find is all about is about environmental groups being able to work the legislative systems state to state and federally and get their goals optimized and achieved. And really, I got to be honest, I am one of the first guys out there to criticize anglers, angler lobbies, and everybody except those who work so hard, not proactively for angler rights and angler freedoms and access. But that's really what happened. The extremists who really don't want to see us fishing took a good 20-year look at the system and said, these guys are complete morons, being the angler market, the sport fishing market, the lobbies who are representing us. And I'm not talking about people who have done all the good work, okay? I'm talking about the state of fishery politics and how we are represented. And again, you know, a lot of this stuff, so getting back to the point, what happened was the environmentalists were able to enact the Marine Life Protection Act to close up big part swaths of the fishery up and down the California's 1,000-mile coast. And it took them another 10 years to figure out how to enact it. What they did was they realized they needed money, and they got that money. And that's why I keep bringing up the name of the Packard Foundation, who owns Monterey Bay Aquarium, who's the biggest contributor, somewhere around $20 million, to getting this thing enacted. In the meantime, you have had scientists from around the globe say, hey, this is not a good thing. This is not based on science. It's not going to achieve what you want it to achieve. And it's already shut down communities on the California coast who depended. It was the last straw. The logging's been gone for a long time. The commercial fishing has been nearly extinct for a long time. Now that they closed these areas, the commercial and the recreational fishing is gone, and half the tourists who used to come don't come anymore because they can't go diving for abalone in a protected area. They can't go fishing on their kayaks. They can't put their skiffs in the water. I talk to groups all the time who've been coming for 30 or 40 years as family groups, and they don't make these trips anymore because 10 miles up and down from where they stayed for decades is now closed to fishing.
Yeah.
This has happened in Florida, all over the eastern seaboard. Lots of it has to do, getting back to the politics and the difference in, I have to say, their politics and our politics. I remember in Massachusetts and New York and New Jersey, they closed, when they couldn't close the fisheries because of strong angler lobbies, they closed the access to the fisheries. So there are areas on the eastern seaboard you can't park within 5 miles of where you might want to access the beach, or you'll come back to no car.
I know that. Now, you know, one thing that, you know, I'm not like, you know, I try not to get too into politics and things like that, you know, because I know many bloggers that have ruined their fishing blogs by getting, you know, too political and everything. But one thing that I have found out when it comes to politics and the environment, or the politics and fishing, there's always a cash grab involved somewhere. Otherwise, somebody's not going to be interested in it one way or another. So you can be – I don't know exactly what the cash grab is out in California, or why they keep closing it off.
I don't believe one exists.
Really?
I believe that there are people in California who have so much money that they see politically they could achieve this means. You know, there's a lot of people out there who don't want to see us fishing.
Yeah.
In the same breath, there's a lot of people out there with political power who don't want to see us accessing the beaches in front of their coastal homes. And while I could never prove that assertion, I know it exists.
Okay, the landing crew is wanting to chime in here. What do you got to say, Mark?
Hey, Spiker. San Diego. Hey, man. I lived in San Diego for 4 years in the Marine Corps right there at Pendleton. And I fished, I worked with Tommy Gomez and the Bloody Decks crew.
Sure.
And SD Fish and all those guys.
Have a strong community down there through Bloody Decks.
Yeah, in the NorCal too,
Yeah, this is one of the best. It really is. NorCal, NCKA.org.
Yes. And it's, I left there in 2008, right as the whole process, everyone needs to understand, it wasn't like 10 years and then all of a sudden the legislation just started. They waited and waited, got their backing. As everyone on the angling side kind of put it to the back burner, only a few of Tommy and the rest of them who were in the industry knew that this was coming, and the rest of us didn't really believe them. And it was a fault on my part because I didn't believe them, because I could not believe that they would shut down La Jolla, Seal Beach.
Point Doom, Malibu.
Yeah.
Salt Point up here is closed now. And now, to give you a heads up on the MLPA right now, there have been two lawsuits that have been filed. The first one was I beat up the fishing lobbies a lot, and I direct as much money to them as I can because they're so important. My real point about that, recreational fishing, the politics of it, we're not proactive. We don't nip anything in the bud, and we deal with things in a reactionary way. We always have, and it's just the way it is. It's very frustrating. But when you're not proactive, on the other hand, the people who wanted to see fishing outlawed, they just took a good look, and they had an easy mark in the fishing section for achieving the goals that they wanted to achieve. Now, when the fishing lobbies woke up and got their funding and the time was appropriate, we went through a big stakeholder process here where everybody was allowed to put in their 2 cents, the recreationists, the environmentalists, the citizen beachgoers, the anglers, the divers, everybody, the sailors, the paddlers, recreationists, everybody got to put in their say. But I felt from the beginning that whole thing was like a puppet show. And a lot of guys I know who were stakeholder representatives got very, very offended and embarrassed for their contribution when they found out in the end it was a puppet show. Well, one of the fishing lobby, and they never should have been. Nobody should have any shame. This is just, it's just business, the business of fishing and the business of politics. And what happened was that Bob Fletcher, who's with Sport Fishing Association of California, he is one of my mentor writers, lobbyists, representatives, and he's always had been able to walk a fair line representing recreational fishermen and commercial fishermen, who are two groups that put a big wall up between each other, but really have clearly always had to work together to make sustainable fisheries. And Bob always knew that. He asked for some information from the organization that is managing and running the Marine Life Protection Act implementation, making it happen. And they said, hey, we're not a state group. We don't have to give you that organization. He went to court, sued them, and the judges came back and said, hey, you sure are a state organization. You're working for the people. And what that information he asked for demonstrated was that this was a closed process puppet show with a determined result, and now a second suit based on that information coming out has been filed for the South Coast region, which is La Jolla and those guys in San Diego, And they included my area in the North Central region, which is already closed because, I guess, because it's a giant travesty. So this isn't a done deal. While closures have gone into effect and the southern closure is scheduled for the springtime, I just got a press release on that from Department of Fish and Game, I think this lawsuit is going to throw a big wrench in it. And what some of the representatives from the state are saying, that's Fish and Game Commission, is that the lawsuit could stall implementation for at least a year down in San Diego and Los Angeles and Orange County. And that's just huge. What they're doing, I'm going to get off this rant real quick so somebody else can contribute. What they're doing is they're trying to make sport fishing an unacceptable thing. And I grew up and have driven my entire career in kayak fishing with respect to the fact that recreational fishing is a traditional American pastime and a wholesome family activity. You've got very strong political lobbying elements right now that are raising their kids and want you to raise your kids to think that fishing is not wholesome at all, that it's bad. And that is the reality.
It's not just an American pastime. I mean, this is a worldwide pastime.
Before Jesus was around, so, you know.
He fished.
Someone extremely strong to Jesus, you know what I mean?
You got it.
Okay, no religion either, Mark. I'm kidding.
You can tell I'm passionate about it.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? And we're doing such a good job in the United States of setting an example for undoing the damage we've done and creating sustainable fisheries. A lot of people have to pay on both the commercial and recreational end. It's not going to be what it was. The heyday is long over, but it is sustainable, and it can still be a traditional pastime and a wholesome family activity. And that's our job. I think that, you know, I never really considered myself political in that sense, but I feel this is my respect or what I've got to, not my respect, what I've got to give back to the fishery for the blessing of being able to do what I'm doing right now.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
But, you know, there's there's a guy that got a hold of me recently, and they have this huge fishing website in the Ukraine, right? Now, I can't really understand a lot of it, but it's a worldwide thing. It's not just an American thing. It's not just something that, you know, you do out west or
up
north.
No, it's global, that's for sure. And you even see it in kayak fishing. I mean, Italy, Spain, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, North America, Latin America, South. It's everywhere. I even hear from the Japanese who are kayak fishing.
Yeah, absolutely. In the UK, and they're out there, sending in pictures and videos of all their stuff that they're doing, over in the UK. So I think it's an awesome thing, It's not just an American thing; it's a worldwide thing, do I still have you? I just lost my chat room.
All right, I'm here. Spike's here.
Okay, cool.
Who else we got? Everybody in?
Yeah.
So
Chuck, have you seen the picture on Spiker's Facebook page there with the big, huge white sea bass there?
Yeah.
Pretty impressive,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah, I think it's pretty crazy.
And you got that in a kayak, Spiker?
Yeah. That was... we've got those little Pacific squids. They're about 5-6 inches long. They show up every year, April, May, you start looking for them. They put big light boats on the water to go looking for them, the commercial guys. So my cousin lives at the beach. He calls me, says, Denny, the squid boats are here, and it looks like they're staying. Anytime the squid come, the white sea bass have a chance of coming in following them. So we went out. I threw a little spoon on 12-pound test and broke the line off, tied another one on. The line was brittle. I had caught. We make a lot of bait, you know, using sabikis and fish catchers. And we make a lot of live bait, put them in live wells on the kayaks or in portable tanks at the side. And I had made a sardine that was about the size of my forearm. I remember seeing this thing and saying, if it doesn't get bit, I'm taking it home and eating it. And when I broke off the first fish, I dug for my heaviest reel, which was a 25-pound outfit. I had that sardine soaking, so I untied the 20-pound leader, tied it onto the 25-pound outfit, and I put it in the rod holder after holding it for 10 minutes. Nothing was happening, and I got distracted, and all of a sudden it felt like my boat was bending in half. I turned. The rod tip was in the water. This thing gave me easily three big runs. Pulled me, I don't know, probably 1,000 yards.
Wow.
And then in typical white sea bass fashion, I finally got it to the boat, and it came up nearly dead on its side.
Oh, my God.
I could have lifted it with my thumb.
Now, didn't you say something? I mean, I think you had a caption on there or something. Wasn't that close to a state record or a world record?
It's a kayak fishing record. Nobody's caught a heavier white sea bass on a kayak. And no, it was at the time, it was like 9 pounds off the state record. But since, a diver has shot a 94 pounder in the kelp.
Yeah, but from a kayak or?
From a kayak, it stands. This year, I think it'll be 10 years, either 10 or 11. It's a kayak fishing record all the way.
What? Spearfishing? Come on.
No, I'm just talking about the state record. That's what the state record is now, 94 pounds.
Okay.
And that was a speared fish.
That's a totally different category, man.
I also have the Cubera snapper record on a kayak.
Do you really? How big?
Yeah, the dogtooth snapper, 36 pounds.
No kidding.
Ooh. I'm guessing somebody out there has broke it, but I never heard about it. And it's kind of, you know, I don't know if it's going to be easy to break that record, because they told me in Mexico that over 30 pounds, they rarely catch them on hook and line because the fish are just too strong. All the heavier fish, they say, get shot.
Wow.
The white sea bass, that's really one of my, it took a year to figure out how cool that fish was. I mean, we were catching so many fish, and that was an epic bite. That was an epic bite. The squid showed up, the white sea bass showed up, the juvenile white shark showed up, and we caught white sea bass for 10 weeks. The first one, my big one landed was 75. I had 6 over 60, 6 over 50, and as the weeks went on, the fish got fewer and smaller. But it lasted about almost 3 months, that bite lasted.
Wow, no kidding.
And it's been back since. It hasn't been quite that epic. And I expect one day a guy will catch one bigger than that. But I figure for holding up for a decade, I'm pretty proud of that one.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, Isaac, you get stuff like that up there in Oregon?
White sea bass? No,
yes.
We don't.
No? What's your
big fish
up there?
He gets king salmon and albacore. He's drooling. I have him drooling like Homer in no time.
Exactly. You got it, man.
We got the spring Chinook running. They're in the river right now. I'll start fishing them here in about 2 weeks. When the bulk of the run's coming through. So that I'm looking forward to. Sturgeon season's wrapping up.
Awesome.
They're always fun.
That's an insane fish, you guys, the sturgeon.
Yeah.
And I just got to add one more thing, and I'm going to shut up. Isaac was on the early show today, and he was talking about his anchor rigging and his 300 feet of line. And I got to tell you, this guy, I don't even know yet, but I can tell you for sure, when it comes to river fishing on a kayak, this guy has got it so wired.
Oh, absolutely, man. He goes, you know, they do the same thing up in, the landing cruise area up there in Virginia Beach and Chesapeake Bay and stuff, you know, because they're out there fishing a surf line, you know, for giant redfish up there. So they got to use two.
Really?
Like,
well, I thought you were
going
to say stripers. They're fishing for giant drum?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Why, yes, sir, I am.
They do the stripers, but that you got to get rigged up a certain way with these you know, anchors, a bow and a stern anchor with a lot of line, because they're going through some pretty heavy swells, you know, going
right
after these big giant, you know, I mean, I'm talking, you know, 52 inch redfish, you know, those are pretty big.
That's sick.
Yeah,
I got to do it.
Absolutely.
Come
man.
On out,
that's
man.
It's a good fishery out there.
Email me, please. Mike at kayakfishing.com.
There you go.
I'm excited.
So, Chuck,
tell
what
it to me, Isaac. What's going on up there?
Yeah,
like I said, we got sturgeon season winding down. I unfortunately only got a fish for about 2 hours. The season this year looks like it's only going to be open for 9 days. All of which are my work days. So that made things pretty tough. I got out, you know, after work one day. But I've got a big trip coming this summer for some big sturgeon. Like I said, Chinook are coming in right now, and I'm eager to get out there. The state opened up a bunch of water that they closed last year. And the stretch of river that they opened up, I'm very familiar with, very comfortable, and looking forward to putting some 30-pound Chinook on the boat. And then, yeah, we got everything else from there. I managed to get out in the salt water a couple weeks ago, that was just last week, which was great. It's not that very often that things calm down enough in the winter,
yeah,
so we
sure
can get out there and fish. So that was nice. I had just a 4-foot, 5-foot swell. So
anything chewing?
Oh man, were they chewing?
Salmon fishing?
Fish, all day. No, saltwater.
Salmon fishing?
No, we were bottom fishing.
Oh man, that's not even legal here till June.
I know it's not. It's legal here pretty much all year long.
As long as you can get out, which is rare.
As long as you can get out, yeah. Like I said, the rockfish were biting. Picked up a few lingcod. Only one capon on the day.
Nice.
But, oh, man, it was crazy. So.
I'm eating my heart out.
Like I said, yep, salmon are in the rivers now, so I'll be out there soon.
Well, you know, Rebecca, you know, from the Outdoorist there, from the Outdoor Blogger Network, you know, she's in the summertime, she's always on the salmon up there on fly. You know, she'll be pulling in these big, you know, 50-inch looking salmon, you know. Yeah, I'm like, man, my freezer would be full if that was me. But anyway, she's rumor has it now that she's heading down south to fish Andros. Right, and fly fish for bonefish. And I said, well, you know, if you like that stuff up there, then, you know, you just plan on putting your house up for sale and come on down, and you'll be, you know, trying to figure out a way to move to the Bahamas there, because that's a lot of fun down there fishing for bonefish on fly, man.
Oh, insanity.
So
it doesn't help that it's cold and wet in Idaho right now either.
No, not at all. I don't wish I was there, man. Trust me, because I'm allergic to the cold. But hey, I gotta say, Chuck, now for Mosquito Lagoon Fishapalooza now, what are we looking at here? You know, if you don't know, Redfish Chuck is a kayak fishing guide down in Mosquito Lagoon over there. And, you know, what are we looking at there for Fishapalooza, man? Are we going to have to get out there at the butt crack of dawn and start, banging the oyster bars or what?
No, you always got to get out at the butt crack of dawn in the lagoon, man, if you want to get on the best part of the bite. No, I don't think we're going to be around much oysters unless we go north of where we were at last time, because you just don't see them that far south. The salinity in the lagoon tends to taper off a little bit, and those oysters don't really like that fresh water too much. So it'll pretty much be quite similar to what we did last time.
will work kind of like a flock, kind of trying to herd the schools, if you will, just, you know, working in a line, trying to see if we can't bump up some fish. That time of year, it's a little tough. Sometimes you find tailing fish, sometimes you don't. But like I said, the beauty of fishing in April is those fish are really, really aggressive, you know, and there's times where you can watch a 35 to 40-inch fish chase down a big jerk bait or, you know, come cruising after a gold spoon or something like that and pushing water like you see them running from you. They'll push water like that running to you, trying to eat your lure as you're reeling it into you. So it's a lot of fun. The trout are still going to be firing off pretty good that time of year, like I said on the earlier show, and we should have a couple shots of some black drum, maybe even some more flounder. It should be fun times had by all.
And that's you can get a hold of Chuck at chuckskayakadventures.com.
Yeah.
And give Chuck a ring. So you put up about another 30 points there on Kayak Wars the other day.
Yeah, I had a trip. I took a couple friends of mine, my buddy Jim, who is kind enough to invite me offshore fishing quite a bit on his boat. He wanted to take his dad fishing in the lagoon, and you know, I didn't want to charge him anything to do it, and probably shouldn't have, but he insisted, so I'm not going to say no to for money. So, you know, it was a good day, except for the fact that we had a really strong cold front push through, which pushed through a nasty storm, and we kind of got caught out there in it, and it wasn't too bad. It wasn't lightning or nothing like that. It was just really, really heavy rain. I mean, visibility might have been 50 yards at best at times, and it was kind of, you know, just miserable conditions. I did get his dad on a nice redfish, a 28-inch fish, which is a pretty good fish. We saw a group of about six fish tailing. And I saw multiple other fish throughout the morning and afternoon. It's just, as you kind of saw, it's kind of tough, man. It's not as easy as just fan casting all over the place and hooking up the fish. When you're really looking for them, you're looking for movement and tails. You're looking for backs sticking out of the water. You're looking just for pushes and that kind of thing. I found a bunch of that and pointed out a bunch of that. But, you know, if you're not used to casting at a fish that's moving at a pretty snail pace, if you will, it could be kind of a challenge, especially when those fish are feeding, you know. So we didn't button up any of those fish, but we came back in towards the ramp and fished around right there in that little pocket right by the ramp where we were fishing that one the time you guys were down. And I got a nice 24-inch sea trout, 20-inch sea trout, and probably a dozen or so rat reds and probably 15 casts, and it was a good day. They had a lot of fun. I think I've got them hooked. They're probably going to be future kayak anglers themselves. I think they were talking about wanting to go purchase a couple boats now, so that was my goal. My goal, anytime I take someone fishing, my goal is always to get them introduced to the sport and try and make it as fun for them as I can so that they want to go out and purchase a boat and, you know, get into it just like we are. So,
yeah, absolutely, man. It was you know, that's what it's all about. And I tell you what, man, I had a blast out there with you guys when we went down there. You know, getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning and heading out. I mean, it was worth it. Trust me, man. It was a lot of fun. So, you know, give Chuck a call. You know, if you're in that area, that's a beautiful fishery down there too. You ever fish that area, Spiker?
I have. I fished with Doug Olander, the editor-in-chief of Sport Fishing Magazine.
Nice.
He showed me all around Indian River and Mosquito Lagoon. And we had slim pickings for fishing, but we had a really good time. And it is. It's all of Florida. I mean, it's like you don't find anywhere else on the planet that's like these fisheries and ecosystems. It's really spectacular.
Yeah, I kind of like it in Florida, too. But I'm on the West Coast. I'm on the Tampa side, which is still, you know, I still love it over
I've
here.
I've been over there
area.
Fishing, what is it, Pine Island?
Yeah,
out of Fort Myers or something?
Yeah, that's Matlache. That's a little bit south of me.
Right, Matlache, that whole area.
Yeah,
I've been a lot better there. Lots of sea trout. Got my first snook, my first red.
Yeah, that's a great ecosystem right there too, man. But you know, where I live, I live in like the most densely populated county in Florida, and a lot of people across the country, I never realized this, are talking about, you know, there's no access to water, you know, to launch their kayak, or they got to drive, you know, 20 miles to get somewhere to fish. And I'm like, Man, I'm like 10 minutes away from about 15
places.
There's
water everywhere.
I'm telling you, man, I can launch my kayak, for, you know, about 15 different places within, you know, a 10-minute drive of my house. So I feel really lucky in that respect, you know.
You know, I've seen it, I've said it before, one of the things I like about going to Florida is you see this, that recreational fishing is alive there. And you go to other areas in the country, and even up in, you know, in the north and the Midwest and stuff, it's not like it used to be. You don't see the evidence of angling the way it used to be. The health, you know, when it was part of a healthy economy and socially acceptable, you know, by everyone. But it is refreshing for me to go to places. And I see it here in Northern California a lot more than I see it in Southern California. I remember as a kid, you know, you want to put your boat in the water, there's going to be a long line. And you'd think with the population influx it would still be that way. But I think that the angler in Southern California in a big way has been priced out of fishing because it's gotten a lot more expensive, again, with limited access and limited opportunities. We don't have a lot of lakes and rivers, especially in the southern part of, or I should say, in the southern half of the state. We don't have as many lakes and rivers as other people appreciate, and the northern part of the state does, and a big chunk of the fishery is in the salt water. You know, there's less boats going out, and it's expensive to have your own. I think that's why we do so well with kayak fishing.
Yeah. You know, another thing...
gas.
Jump in. What was that, Isaac?
And not to mention $5 a gallon for gas.
Oh,
crazy,
yeah.
Man.
I know. It's heading that way here. I think it was... $3.49.
Now you guys pay nothing.
Really?
Yeah, the Michelle's car is $4.06 today a gallon for the super, and I'm paying I think $3.93.
Yeah, sir. That's pretty high.
I should have prefaced it. The San Francisco Bay Area,
yeah,
within 150 miles, is the most expensive gas in the country.
Wow, I believe it, man. You know, right now I'm still carless, so I'm kind of happy about it, you know, because I don't. The only thing I really wish I had a car for is to go fishing, you know, because it definitely limits my. You know, I was like trying to figure out how can I attach my kayak and my kayak cart to my bike, you know. But
the kayak chariot.
Yeah, there you go, man.
I'm sure they still make it out of San Diego or San Clemente or something.
Yeah, and
you
know,
it was called the kayak chariot, and it was a little cart for towing your kayak behind your bike.
Wow. You know,
we fish our backyard, and what did you say? You're 10 minutes from the access?
Yeah, absolutely.
How sweet it is.
I know. But I was thinking, you know, a lot of times in the trash, you know, these people throw away these, you know, the little, I call them kid trailers, where you put the little kid in the little trailer and you can put it behind your bike or, you know,
right.
Whatever. You know, I mean, those are pretty common finds, you know, around apartment complex dumpsters. So I'm like thinking, man, if I find one of those, I'll, you know, see what I can do.
Have y'all got Harbor Freight tools in Florida yet?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know. Chuck, have you heard of those?
Yeah. Yes, we do.
Okay.
Harbor Freight, this is a kayak fisherman's mecca of every tool and hardware piece made in the Orient. But they've got a wall of wheels that have probably gone on more kayak carts than kayak carts, and wheels for $5, little pneumatic wheels.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm sure you can MacGyver something for that cause.
Absolutely. I mean, I do have a kayak cart. I'm just, you know, hooking it up to the bike, I haven't quite figured it out yet, but you never know, one day, you know. No, I should be getting a vehicle here soon, but, you know, I was really, you know, it's another reason to pick up a kayak, you know. You're not, I couldn't imagine having a boat and, you know, having to, no, dump $200 worth of gas in it to go out somewhere, you know. I mean, that would just be, wow, you know.
I forget the expense. I hated the 2 hours of cleanup after we got to the dock every time.
Well, yeah, that too.
You know, as long as you don't leave any squid inside your kayak, you can always clean it a week later.
Yeah, Or, you know, gulp shrimp or gulp crabs. Those are just as bad.
Hey, oh my fishing's been all about crabbing up here in Northern California, and I am getting fat on Dungeness.
Awesome.
It really is incredible. You know, for all those nights I'd go out in Southern California and drop the hoop nets, and it's cold and foggy, and you're getting beat up around the jetties fishing for Pacific lobsters, and not always catching them, not always getting your limit when you did catch them. You come up here, put a couple of crab pots out with a big old turkey neck in it, and you're going to have $75 to $150 worth of crabs sitting in there.
Yeah, definitely.
And
you know,
it's delicious.
Oh, yeah. I know. Isaac, you do crabbing up there, don't you? Are you still there, Isaac? I think Isaac fell off.
Yeah, we might have lost him. Yeah, he's got Dungeness up there as well. They've got, I got to tell you guys, just from, I haven't had the opportunity to check out what Isaac's doing up there, but from the few things he said on the earlier show, this guy has got it wired. And big river fishing for sturgeon and salmon on a kayak is one of the most difficult things in the world to get down. There's a lot to be learned from this guy, I'm sure of that.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, he knows what he's doing up there, man. Well,
no
what'd
doubt.
You say, Isaac? Did you get back there?
No, this is Chuck. I just said that Isaac is the man when it comes to that stuff.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I don't want him to hear me flattering him like this.
This is like totally, I mean, I know very little about like West Coast fishing, and he's like, you know, posting videos and stuff all the time. So, I really like, you know, learning about other fisheries and seeing that sort of stuff. So I think it's pretty awesome.
It's incredible, you know, and it's such a bummer for me because most of what I know about is all through contacts like we're doing now on the phone and emails and networking. I have so little time to roam around the country and look at all these websites, and there's just so much great content out there.
I know.
Familiar with all the forums, I'm fly fishing and going on long range trips, you'll know I'm headed towards retirement.
Well, doesn't sound like a bad idea, man. You know, that's the
one way to spend your retirement. I'm working for real hard to get to semi retirement one day.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what it's all about, man. You got to do all that stuff. But, you know, I had no idea that, you know, they had that good of a fishery up there in Virginia, you know, until I watched this these Kayak Kevin DVDs and saw a couple of blogs up there before, you know, some of the guys on the stripers up there, man. Now, you know, they have stripers up there in that area that are, you know, in the 50-inch range. And
all the records.
Yeah. Oh, do they really? Chesapeake Bay?
All the records.
That's, no kidding. I would have thought... Huh?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I think what you're saying about Virginia, the more and more I look, I think it's the whole eastern seaboard. And one thing I noticed in California, which I've always said holds true around the country, in kayaks, we're appreciating recovering fisheries long before they're viable for the recreational and commercial fishing industry. We're less invasive. We cover our areas more articulately. And for whatever reason, we catch more fish. And these are areas that if we would have been fishing our kayaks, you know, 15 years ago, we wouldn't be catching the fish. The fish are just coming back, I think, in a lot of these areas.
Hmm.
You know, recovering from overfishing, a lot of pollution in the 60s and 70s, and even on the eastern seaboard earlier than that, all through the 1900s, the pollution had a huge impact on the nearshore fisheries. And I don't believe they started coming back until the late 70s, early 80s, and then have been coming back a lot stronger ever since. But I've seen it in fisheries, you know, the Gulf Coast, eastern seaboard, the Pacific. I think the kayak anglers and the fact that we're new and putting more time on the water, I think we're discovering recovering fisheries faster than the fishing methods that left them a long time ago.
Yeah, I know. The Great
Does that make
Lakes,
any sense?
Too. Absolutely. The Great Lakes, too, you know, I mean...
You got that. I've hung a lot on Lake Erie. The spikes are from Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. It was, you know, back in the day, that was, you know, nowhere to be in a boat or a kayak, you know. I mean, it was just it was a nasty place, and I think it's bounced back quite a bit, man, from what I heard.
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it.
A lot of smallmouth up there.
The salmon fishing, the lake
yep.
trout, the perch, the definitely healthier fisheries than they used to be. Again, now the Great Lakes are dealing, and we're seeing it in California lakes too, invasive species.
Yeah. Now,
big problem.
I had Isaac muted by accident. Sorry, Isaac, it was not intentional. I don't know how it happened. But
you should have heard me yelling.
Hey, I don't want a free fishing trip or anything for all that flattery.
Oh, geez. Yeah. You know, I was going to chime in back on the crab topic. We actually have a crab kayak tournament up here.
Do you really?
Sickos. You guys have it bad.
A bunch of guys in kayaks, and we have a little tournament.
That's cool. What
is
do you
that
mean,
an ongoing
man?
Thing, or...?
I'm hoping we do it again this year. I don't run them, so.
Hook me up when you get that information. That's a good one.
Great.
You go by weight or biggest crab or what?
Single biggest crab is the winner. But, I mean, you come back and you've got everybody with limits of crab and a big giant crab boil.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Know, right.
That's
there
the way to go.
Just fire it up and go.
Awesome,
great.
Man. That sounds like a fun time. I've never thought about doing any crabbing. I mean, you know, we have blue crab down here and stuff, but what's that other one? Chuck, help me out with that.
Stone crab.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm,
and the Keys.
Stone crab.
The Keys, they have lobster season.
Spiny lobster. What about shrimp?
Man.
You guys have set shrimp traps?
They do.
The
yeah, they have
not
like
Oregon.
Shrimp runs down here, but you can. I've never heard of trapping them or anything, but you can dip net them. Certain
times
of the
year. Are they edible shrimp?
I trap them.
Yeah, they're edible.
I trap them all the time.
Do you really? What do you
yeah,
use?
I trap them all the time. We use a box trap, and what you do is you find yourself a seawall. You have to have a seawall, or it'll yeah. Basically, that's it for as far as trapping goes. And you don't bait it or anything. You just lay the trap in the water up against the seawall with one end against the seawall, the other end sticking out towards just the open water. And what happens is at night these shrimp will start moving around, and they go into this trap. And basically what it is it's a box. And they come in, they hit a wall of chicken wire, if you will, and bounce along until they find their way out of the chicken wire, which is into the catch area of the trap. And once they're in the catch area, they can't find their way back out again. But our legal limit of shrimp here is 5 gallons per person. So, and they're nice shrimp. I mean, it's a white shrimp. It's the same shrimp that you would get out of the Gulf Coast or off the Atlantic Coast here with the big shrimp boats. And I guess average size, tail only, I'm not going to include a head, but tail only, your average size would be about 3, maybe 4 inches. Every now and again, get lucky and get them about 6 to 8 inches long, just the tails. So, but no, that's one of my favorite things to do.
That's cool. I've never heard of that. Now over here, I forget what time of year it is, but I have been out at the Skyway during the shrimp run, and it's ridiculous. I mean, you can sit there and it's as far as you can see in every direction. It's just like giant clouds of shrimp, and they're not little. I mean, some of these are, you know, as big as a big pen, you know, I mean, or bigger, you know. Those are some pretty monstrous, when they say jumbo shrimp, those are them. So,
what we have too here in Florida, and maybe you can join me one time for doing this, is just south of where I'm at, down on the beach. I think we spoke about it once before. Actually, closer to where Dee is, about a half hour south of where Dee's located, there's patch reefs just off the beach. I mean, you're talking 15 foot of water or so. And as soon as lobster season goes into effect, not just in the Keys, it's a statewide season, then we go down there and we'll just jump in off the beach and you can get all the lobsters you want. So most of the time they're big, too.
No kidding.
Yep.
That's awesome. And now, do you, when you go, I've never gone lobstering, but like, So what you do is you just go out there and you got your snorkel gear and a bag and you just grab them and throw them in the bag with your gloves on or what?
Yeah, kind of. We use tickle sticks and things like that to kind of snare sometimes to get them out from underneath the ledges or out from inside the holes. There's a lot of moray eels down here, so you really don't want to be sticking your arms in the crevices unless you see down in there real well. But, no, it's pretty basic. I mean, my buddy Josh has got a hookah, and this year we're going to use the hookah to do it. I mean, it's kind of like cheating because you're down there forever, but you know what? If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So, you know, if you can get...
If it's legal, it ain't cheating.
Yeah, there you go. If you can get your limit of lobsters in 15 foot of water and not have to deal with a crowd down in the Keys, then I'm all for it, you know?
Definitely. I mean, that's like, you know, it's like Mecca down there. You know, you can't get a hotel, you can't launch your boat, you can't find a place to park. I mean, it's just insanity down there during lobster season. And it's only for like a couple of days. It's not even a week.
Well, the mini season's a couple of days, and then you have an actual season that lasts about a month and a half.
Oh, really?
But,
I thought it was just the mini season.
No. We have a mini season, which is like kind of like they call it sportsman season, where guys go out and you got 3 days to pick through the big ones that are there, and then after that you're pretty much cleaning up all the rest of the ones that are left over after the sportsmen get through with it. I'll tell you what about crabs. You should get into doing some crabbing. Blue crabs aren't bad eating, and they're a lot of work for a little reward, but they're pretty good. I'll tell you something. We have a crab off the coast here. We call it a peekaboo crab or rooster crab, and you can't really trap it. I don't know of any commercial body that's actually doing it, but we used to get them off the scallop boats. When the scallop boats were running real thick out of Fort Canaveral, they'd go out and just scrape the seafloor to get the scallops and pick up these crabs by accident. And I worked at one of these processing plants for quite a while. And one of the things I would always notice is that these crabs would come down this conveyor belt and go up into a dump truck and just pretty much be carted off and go to landfill or something like that. Because nobody ever really collected them. Nobody really took them home. And I'm like, well, it's a crab. It's got big claws, which usually means it has tons of meat inside the claws. So let me try it. I popped a couple claws off a few, took them home. They were absolutely delicious.
I'll
bet. And, you know, for like 2 years straight, every day I'd gather up these claws, and I'd get a 150-quart igloo cooler flat full of claws, and then all the lobster tails and stuff like that, other bycatch to come off the boat. Me and my buddies would eat crab claws, lobster tails, grouper, snapper, flounder, whatever else was bycatch off the boat, because the scallop houses didn't even touch it. They just threw it all away.
No kidding. You know, I've done that before. I did that for one weekend one time. One of my buddies had a shrimp boat, and I went out on it and was helping him work that. And it's like, dude, it's like 3 days or three nights, really, of and it's tough work, man. And you got to sort the pile, man. That's no fun because there's jellyfish in there. Everything in the pile. Yeah, everything in that pile will stab you.
Will mess you up, man.
Yeah, so I was like, you know, okay, yeah, it's really nice, you know, going out there making, you know, $500 in a weekend. Back then, that was really nice, you know, when you're like 20 years old. But definitely
not. And you're fishing.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely not something that I would want to do on a regular basis, you know. That's a definite.
Hey,
real
quick, I'm about to drop off here. I got to go to bed.
Okay.
I wanted to tell you real fast that one of the other seasons that's coming in right now over here for fishing-wise is cobia. We've got the cobia are starting to run really, really thick outside Port Canaveral and Sebastian Inlet and up towards Ponce. And that is something that we can do out of the kayaks. That's something they'll get on bait pods like pogies and stuff like that, and they'll be in maybe 15, 20 foot of water right off the edge of the surf break. And
catching a rocket.
You're talking about hooking up to a serious fight. My buddy got one the other day, 65 pounds, and he got a couple of them that were in the 50s. Last year, my buddy Ryan Scheidel caught one that was probably close to 90 pounds. Our scale read 85, but I'm going to give him a couple more pounds than that on how accurate our scale was. But, we're getting monsters right now, man. And every bait pod's got 20 to 30 fish in it. And
wow.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. So if they're still around, maybe in March. I mean, March. We're in March. If they're still around in April, man, I do gotta go to bed. if they're still around in April, then perhaps on the day they're all gonna head down south. If anybody wants to join me, I might just do that instead of going down to Sebastian. I might run off the beach if the weather cooperates and try
yeah.
and tie into one of them things.
Dude, and anybody that's listening that doesn't know. Never try to bring one of those things in your kayak unless you've like clubbed it to death or something. If you're planning on keeping that thing or something, do not bring that thing in your kayak still green, because you will get an ass whooping from that thing.
I'm just saying. No, I actually know a guy that got his leg broken by one fishing a couple of years back. He was fishing on a big bait pod. He's by himself in a flats boat, and he caught an ice one, probably about 50, 60 pounds, gassed it, brought it in the boat, and lost control of the fish between getting it in the boat and putting it in the box. And it got loose and slapped him right in the leg and actually broke his leg. He got back in, and he kind of limped back in, called Coast Guard. They came out and actually helped him to get off the boat and all that stuff and rushed him off to the hospital. But, yeah, they're a nasty animal. And plus those spines that are located right in front of their dorsal fin that stick up like razor blades, those things are nasty. But a well-placed 22 caliber shot between the eyes usually does the deal. So
either that or a baseball bat. No.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I'm
wild,
telling you,
like Mark McGuire.
Those things just do not. They just do not stop, man. I mean, you know, and you practically got to kill the thing to get it in the boat with you, man. I mean, I couldn't imagine having a big giant thing like that in the kayak with you, slinging around, man. That's just nasty. So
crazy. My buddy's going to actually take me out here in the next couple of weeks, mothership style, with the kayak, and we're going to run out and try and find a big pod of them, see if I can't get a monster out of the kayak on spin. I've also tied a bunch of big cobia flies, so I'm hoping to get one on the fly rod as well.
That guy's
crazy. We call him Pepperoni. The guy's a nutcase. His parents own an Italian restaurant. His little brother's Meatball. He's Pepperoni, and they're like his little brother's like 16 or 17. He's 22 maybe. And they're commercial fishermen, man. They make a really good living doing it, and they're just really good people. So quick shout out to those guys, and I appreciate them letting me tag along mothership style.
Yeah, dude, you hook into, you get a fish like that for kayak wars, man, there's some big points right there, buddy.
Well, I'm all over it, dude, trust me. I told you guys a while ago, don't worry about the points thing. I mean, it's early yet, and once spring
rolls, I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, I got the opportunity to run offshore quite a bit this year, so I'm going to be able to tie into some dolphins, some yellowfin tuna, some blackfin tuna, skippies, and that kind of thing, so we'll make it work.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, and anytime that you want to, take your buddy a bad back cast out there, on the other side of the Gulf Stream or something, and, get out there in kayaks or something, I'm up for that, man. I'll go out there.
All right.
I'll club some cobias.
All right. I'll see if I can't find you a spot or two on a boat.
All right, man. Well, hey, Chuck, man, thanks for coming on. Definitely.
Guys, take it easy.
All right, man. See ya. That was the always illustrious Redfish Chuck from Titusville there. So if you're in the area and you want to go out on a kayak fishing trip in the lagoon, give Chuck a call. Kayak Fishing Adventure, Chuck's Kayak Fishing Adventures.com. So, well, we're about the end of, we're over our hour here. So I think I'm going to close down shop here because I'm like losing the ability to talk here. I'm all tired. So,
Thanks, Rob.
No problems. Hey, I'm telling you,
thanks,
Dennis.
You guys.
Thanks for coming on, and you're welcome to come on anytime. So
I appreciate it. You're going to hear from me often.
And,
I really appreciate it.
You
it's
got
a lot of fun. I'm learning a lot.
You got something that you need to talk about or want to promote or something? Just the number.
Well, I'll get to it next week. Isaac, let's go fishing.
Yeah, dude.
We'll hook up. Y'all have a good week.
There.
Look forward to talking to you next.
All right, man.
Sounds like
safe waters, everybody.
All right, take care. That was the Dennis Spike from kayakfishing.com. So go ahead and check. He's out on the West Coast there, California, And I tell you, that dude had some awesome stories, man. I'm always glad to have him on. So, Isaac, man, what are you doing? You fishing this weekend?
Oh, man, I'm working this weekend.
Ah, come on.
No, Monday, Tuesday is my weekend. And, yeah, I'll probably get out this time.
Yeah, the weather.
Chinook running, so.
Weather warming up for you?
Oh, not at all. You know, 45 degrees and wet. That sounds like, you know, the average Northwest winter time.
Right.
But, you know, I'm waterproof, so. It's all good.
You guys are crazy, man. I'm allergic to the cold. You wouldn't catch me out there. But, hey, Mark, you going fishing this weekend? Hello, landing crew. Going once, going twice.
Goddamn muted, God, bugger. Sorry.
I didn't mute you.
No, I muted myself because I was taking care of children.
Sorry, Isaac. I don't know how you got muted before. I don't know what happened, but you were, and it wasn't from me. So it's my lovely switchboard here. But go ahead.
No,
Mark.
I had.
Go ahead, uh-huh. Mark. You said you're going fishing.
Yeah, I'm gonna be. I found the keys to fishing the bass. Lakes are starting to warm up here, so I'll be hitting that. You know,
awesome.
You know, if you're ever interested in, you know, redeeming yourself and your man card from the stingray, when you get up here, we'll do some crabbing. You know, because the Chesapeake Bay is known for its blue crab, and you know, I'll show you how to crab, and that is some sweet meat, brother. Oh. Get some real heavy crabs and sit there and pick away, drink beer, and pick
yeah,
away
I'll do
some
that.
More and some crabs.
Okay, I
it
just
is,
got an
you know,
email.
I'm telling you.
I got an email in here. And hold on 1 second. Let me see. This is from Chip in the ATL. Dear Rob, dear Chuck, dear D, get it off, get it off, get it off. Signed, A Bad Bat Cast. Oh, okay, yeah, that's real funny. Yeah. Gee, I wonder who that was from.
That wasn't from me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, even you guys down there, I saw a couple of blue crabs in Jacksonville and Mosquito Lagoon, and, you know, if you can get yourself some, you know, chicken or, you know, dead, you know, bait fish, throw that in a trap or a little hoop net and drop it off. What I do is I'll drop a crab pot on my way out while I'm fishing in one of my secret squirrel spots and fish all day, come back, and pull out the trap, and it'll be, you know, crab packed to the top. And this is a 2-foot-tall trap, packed to the top full of big, big blue claws. You know,
awesome.
And go home, put them on ice, wake up in the morning, crack off the steamer, and, you know, start salivating, you know. You know, and yeah, it's nice, too, because then I've got an unlimited supply of crab meat for, you know, flounder or crab cakes or on my cereal in the morning. And it's, you know, it's some good stuff, man, you know. And, you know, we've got the drum are sitting right off the Carolina coast right now, so I'm jonesing for that. We've got the stripers are moving in, all fat and ready to drop their little baby hell spawn in the rivers up here. I mean, if you can get out, you know, the wind's been really nasty. Mother Nature is kind of sticking her tree trunk in dark places on us, but we're. You know, if we can get out on a good night, man, oh, man, get full. You know, Forrest, he's on the guy that I know named Forrest. He fishes up here on the other side of the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel on a peninsula, and he's got a spot that's really secluded that the bass travel through all night long, and that's all he does. It's just there in the kayak 5 feet from the shoreline behind his house, and just tears up the stripers.
Awesome.
Right.
All right,
and,
well, we got to get out of here, dude. So I'm like falling asleep at the wheel here. But, dude, that's how, yeah, I watched Kayak Kevin's DVDs here this week, and I'm going to write up a review about them and everything, but, they're pretty awesome. You guys got a really cool fishery up there, man, and I really enjoyed watching those and learning about the area and some of the stuff that you fish and some of the tactics and some of the fish that you guys catch, so I think that's awesome. So, you know, next time
everyone's
you see that dude, tell him I said, hey, thanks, man. So, Isaac, Isaac, have you watched those?
Which
the Kayak Kevin DVDs?
Oh, yeah, I own it.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. I mean, good stuff, man. Good stuff.
Great stuff.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, listen, we're at the end of our show here, so I'm kicking everybody out because I'm, like, losing the ability to talk here, and I'm falling asleep at the wheel. But I am a Bad Bat Cast, Rob DeVore, and this is you've been listening to the Kayak Fishing Radio Network, The Late Show. And check me out, abadbatcast.com. That's my website. Check out yakangler.com, too. That's your online total kayak fishing resource. So until next week, I'm going to say see ya, and we'll see you next Thursday night. See you at 8 o'clock. See you at 11 o'clock. So see ya. Have a good one, man. Good night now.